Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Here I am in the dungeon with Phil. Hello, Phil.
Hello, JB.
And down the line with not Tim Cocker, because he's making far too much money this weekend. Almost as much money as our guest, Mark Atkinson. How are you?
Hello, mate. I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, mate, it's such a pleasure.
I'd like to go back there. He's clearly outdoing me this weekend. I've seen his face far too many times on TV.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. So we were just playing a game before. Who is ill at BT Sport? We were going through all the social media profiles. Has someone died? Yes. What's happened?
It's got to be. Nobody wanted the Exeter job, I reckon. Nobody wanted to travel from... Where was it yesterday? They had to get down from Northampton down to Exeter. It must be tough on public transport. So
exactly.
They've obviously had to pull him in, haven't they?
Well... Tim normally flies the Cocker Media G6.
Yeah, so that's a good point.
He'll have taken that from East Midlands Airport to Exeter, and then he'll be flying it up to Newcastle because he's doing some filming with George McGuigan tomorrow.
Now,
I heard he volunteered to cycle, didn't he? That's how he's got the gig.
Well, this is a strange one to start a rugby podcast with, but do you remember when Leicester, as in Leicester... Manchester United flew to Leicester to play a game.
I do. I remember it well. It was a 10-minute flight, reportedly.
That's amazing, isn't it?
It's about 100 miles to get from Manchester to Leicester. But because you have to go kind of the opposite and adjacent sides of the triangle, if you can fly, just go the hypotenuse. So it's 10 minutes just up and over the Pennines.
Perfect. How the other half live, eh?
They got a lot of shit about it, didn't they?
they did, yes. Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was worth it sort of for the social media side of it, but I'd do it. You'd do it if you could, wouldn't you?
You would, but wait until the press find out how Tim travels. Then we've got some real issues. So anyway, before we get going, you can find this podcast on... You can find it on Spotify now. You can find it on any good podcast app. You use what, Phil?
I use Player FM, although... Tim said he couldn't use the search function on Player FM, which I blame as user error, personally.
Absolutely. You can contact us at contact@eggchasers@gmail.com and also Twitter. So, I mean, there's plenty of games to talk about, but I think maybe we should start with a game that someone actually played this week.
Heartbreaking game.
I don't know if you've seen it or you've just seen the highlights, but... It's a strange one. There's probably not that many highlights to watch from a game of that score. When you compare it to the Exeter Quins game this afternoon, it's not that sort of game, even though people probably see it and think it's going to be an absolute like barnstorming game. Mm-hmm. If you love mauls, it's a great game.
Yeah.
We probably just mismanaged the last 10 minutes on it. That's what it is. But I think what the Premiership's proven at the moment is that 12 points is probably not enough, is it? 12, 14 points is probably not enough to... Once the momentum swings, it swings hard, and you can run away with you pretty quickly, and you know some decisions go against you. I won't blame that, but you know, things go against you sometimes when you're away from home, don't they? And you have to ride the momentum.
So what was the feeling? Because you say 12 points, 10 minutes to go, and you're 12 points up. Rewind the clock another 10 minutes, and there's 20 minutes to go, and you're 16 points up. Now, obviously, away at Stonex Arena, how did you feel at that point? Did you think you could close it out, or was it kind of nerves coming in because you've seen it before?
No. I don't think we haven't given away many of them in recent years. You know, it's sort of the Skivington era, I guess. In the last few years, we've generally been pretty good. We've probably chased down a few of them. I don't feel the nerves creeping. I guess this is probably one we'll learn from the most, because it's a game where you're 16 points up. You probably want to play without the ball, and at times we got caught around midfield, probably not launching well enough, probably not clearing our lines well enough, and probably just we didn't switch into the idea of going, well, we had the wind, everything was going for us. You probably don't want to play with the ball.
So I'm going to give you a little bit of a counter question on that, because I wonder if the learning point is something completely different, which is, look at the hard to beat teams this weekend. So Exeter would be a hard to beat team. You guys would be a hard to beat team. Saracens are a very hard to beat team from stingy defence. And yet everyone has leaked, 38 points?
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe the learning curve here is you just don't defend leads now. There's just no point. You just carry on going
just
for it.
Keep scoring.
Well, I mean, what did Harlequins do? They started kicking the ball back to Exeter. Yeah. I mean, that was madness.
That's the one thing I'd say is when this, I think you have to put everything into context, don't you? We had, you know, at the Stone, actually get a massive wind going one way. We were playing with the wind in the second half.
Yeah.
So you know you can probably just squeeze them. And if the ball is down the other end, they're going to have to go through 15 phases, however many phases. And we didn't feel like that was going to be the thing that would challenge us on that day. Mm-hmm. We weren't getting opened up by them. What we were doing was we were being sloppy, a little bit of breakdown, and therefore give it. What do Saris want? They want entries into 22, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, they're obviously changing their style and they've got fantastic players, but ultimately they want entries in and cheap entries in. And that's probably what we end up giving them. So I think a different team on a different day, you know, we've seen Bristol's, Exeter's throw the ball and go from deep and score three tries in 10 minutes. But Saris are the masters at wanting entries in, cheap entries, and they'll just punish you. So I think this will be a big one that we'll learn from. I don't think it's necessarily going in on Monday going, oh God, we've given one away, all that sort of stuff. I think we know we've given one away, but the learnings that will come from it, I would say, from a management side of the game, we'll probably end up going, right, what do we have to look at here? And if we get into this scenario again, how do we fix this?
Yeah, because if you ignore the way the last 20 minutes played out, to score 39 points away and get 2 points out of the game away at Saracens is not a bad situation to be in. So what was there much spoken about immediately after the game around those positives, or was everyone just too downbeat because of the way the last 20 minutes played out?
I'd say, weirdly, I would go as far as saying it's like 72 minutes. That's where like I said, I don't know if you've seen it, but like it goes as far as saying, 12 points up with 8 minutes to go.
Yeah.
You know, you're saying 16 points with 20 minutes to go. On paper, that sounds, you know, and then you go 12 minutes, you concede one try against Saris. That's you can cope with that. And then it's probably the last 7 or 8 minutes where you go, right, 12 points in 7 minutes.
Yeah.
What's the learnings that you take from that? It's probably that we don't want to be playing rugby in and around the halfway. Saris are looking for this is not putting the finger at anyone. This is just the way the Premiership is at the moment, that refs are looking to even things up. That's naturally how the game is at the moment. You know, I don't think that's a controversial statement. I just think that's the way the game is. Once the flood gets open, and you see it, once one penalty goes, it takes a few penalties, and then all of a sudden it comes back to even, and then it'll swing the other way. And basically, it's whether you score tries when you've got the momentum and the ref seeing you your side of the game. I think.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Actually, it's not only is there just game momentum, there's momentum with the ref as well. And can you ride that momentum when you're on top in the scrums or on top in whatever it may be? If he's got a good opinion of you, you've just got to nail it.
Yeah, it's not so much saying, you know, they're getting it right or wrong or the favouring a side. It's just while they're seeing the breakdown going your way or while they're seeing the driving more go your way, do you score points? Or when you're on the receiving end of it, if you're up against it, are you able to sort of withstand, you know, conceding 5 points in that 10-minute period, which you'll probably take at the moment, because that's the way, you know, it's gone are the days of, I think one of the big things, it's gone are the days of like building a score slowly, because your 369 doesn't really come into play anymore, does it? Or not at the moment.
9 points. Yeah,
We might be talking about a different game in November, December time when it's, you know, pissing down on a Friday night. But I think at the moment, there's no real point in building a score.
Yeah, that's not a bad point, actually. Do you think there's been an evolution in the game where coaches were very focused on defence? And because we've got all these defensive systems now and everyone seems to be pretty good at defence, well, everyone's now switched their focus to breaking them down. And that's why we're getting these monstrous scores.
Yeah, I do. I think we went through a period where defences were on top, weren't they? Everyone changed the defensive system. You know, the defence that Guzzi brought in at Sarri's, then everyone started to copy it. And, you know, the kick strategies came in that they've never been seen before. And then I think that's one thing I'd like to see a little bit more of, is that I think we still speak too much about defensive mistakes as opposed to positive attacking play that have overloaded a defender and caused him to bite in.
Yes.
I think the easy thing that we see on the TV at the moment is, you know, oh, the defender's too wide and he's jammed in. Well, he's not jammed in. Most of these players are playing because they're very good defenders, but they've been caused to jam in because they've been overloaded, or they've, you know, attack swung around late and caught most of your players on one side of the pitch, but they've set you up with that. And I think we could probably show that. And that's one, like, you know, we talk about making the game in a positive light. I think highlighting defensive mistakes. Well, defenders don't just make mistakes. They've made a mistake because they've been caused to make a mistake.
That's a good point. It's a very, very good point. Yeah, you don't seem very... In fact, you're more likely now to see attacking mistakes resulting in tries rather than defensive mistakes.
Yeah, like... I was watching the highlights of Irish Bristol.
Yes.
You know, Bristol did some great stuff, and then almost the game turns on its head because Arundel picks an intercept up. Same for us last week against Wasps when Zam picks an intercept on our line and goes the length, and it turns the game on its head. But that's come from attack pushing the boundaries, pushing it to try and score a try, and then ultimately it's one way or the other. Arundel misses that, Bristol score, and it's probably 50 points. Wasp score against us on our line and Zam doesn't score, then it's probably game over.
Yeah. Just on Arundel, I don't know why this has just occurred to me now. It's blindingly obvious to everyone else. I guess Arundel before Arundel was Rhys Summit. Those guys are so important in changing the momentum.
I think it's really... I've played in some teams where they're not quite as quick. I think it's really important to have a rapid... If you've got a rapid back three, it makes a huge difference, you know, because those chances... I know teams will say, oh, most wingers are quick. They are, but there's difference in speed.
Yes.
You know, there are flyers. And I think when you know you've got flyers in your team, those chances that a half break goes to them and they've gone, that's a huge shift for a team. Massive momentum.
Well, it almost puts pressure on the attack for exactly the reasons that you've just spoke about, the Rhys Summit try last week and the Arundel try this week. It's a fraction of a split second miss or misread in attack that creates a try at the other end of the field 10 seconds later.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And defenders are smart. You know, we talk about, like, even like 5 or 6 years ago, you could pause a clip and say, okay, well, you know, fix the inside shoulder and do this. Or the one that really gets me with analysis is because I think there's a huge difference between analysis and review, right?
Yeah.
When you analyze something, if people go like, well, you know, if you run that inside shoulder, they'll turn in. You go, what are you showing me? Because they wouldn't do that, because in this clip you're showing me, the person hasn't done that, and therefore these defenders aren't robots. They're very good players. So I think when you review something, it's tough to say, like, you know, I see it all the time, and like, the papers, for instance, they say, you know, if the attackers are all a little bit wider here, they could be running straight and they just pick off this imaginary 3-on-2. You know, but if they were a little bit wider, then the defence would spread out because...
Yeah.
So I find it a real tough one to sort of... Sometimes when people start to talk about, like, you know, if you just do this, if you just do that, defence will change the picture as well.
Just changing the subject slightly, but... One of my pet hates is doing unopposed, like, captain's runs, and somebody makes a decision, but they justify their decision because they're reacting to the imaginary defence. And like, well, of course, we can all do that, can't we? We can all do that. Yeah. And the analysis is not far off it.
We're all world beaters when there's no defence in front of us, but we're imagining a defence doing something, aren't we?
Exactly. Passes are clean, catches are great. So Saracens, we're three games in now.
Two for Saracens,
two, of course.
Two for Gloucester.
Just give me your analysis of Saracens. Where do you think they are compared to the great Saracens teams of the past? Because they've still got the big names, but maybe not the depth.
Yeah, most of the big names.
Still a bloody good team, aren't they? I mean, they're still at the heartbeat of what's good about them. You know, when it came to... He's had to nail two touchline conversions in 7 minutes, and he's nailed both of them in the win. So, like, you've got to give it to Owen. You know, the lad still has a big set of balls, doesn't he? I think you just nailed it. Then that they've still got the players, but probably not the depth. Mm. And that's what it comes down to. When you're not rolling off Caruso and Will Skelton and Marrow in your second row, when you've just got two of the three or whatever it is, you know, I've probably got a very different opinion on a lot of people about like the way it was for them and all that, because I don't actually agree with some of the salary cap stuff that I think they've brought through that many of their own academy players that they should in some way be rewarded. I don't know how, and no doubt JB will have a controversial opinion on how it should be done. But I just feel like there should be something to reward the fact that if you bring through 10 stars through your academy, I'm not saying cheating is the right way, but how are you going to keep them? And if you can't keep them, they're your players, aren't they?
I'm not sure about that, you know. Go on, Phil.
Well, so you already get the academy credits, but they're pretty limited, aren't they?
I had an argument with I won't go into too much detail about it, but I did have an argument with the salary cap manager about this, because when those credits, the 80 grand that you get for your credit of your academy player that you bring through, a 50 grand, whatever
it's 50k. So the most frequently paid salary in the Premiership is like 42,000, because you add on national insurance or whatnot. So the most likely payment that you'll get per year is 42,000 because of all of the academy lads.
But you're telling me that the 10 stars that salaries have put into the England squad who are getting paid, you know, I don't want to, it's not really my place to guess what they're getting paid, but
you know, if you were to guess,
I know exactly how much they're getting paid. So, so they're getting the same relief in their cap as players who are on 50, you know, 60 grand.
Yeah,
you know, and they've played three games for their club. I don't know what the answer is, but I do feel for them. I'm not saying what they did is right in the slightest, but there's part of me that does empathise with the situation that you bring through these stars and they're all demanding X amount, and your club's only getting the same relief as the club down the road who's got 10 players that are all getting paid pittance. Not pittance, but compared to those players, you know, not as much money, and they've not done... You know what I mean? The relief is the same for them, yeah.
Maybe a better one that people might empathise with a little bit more would be London Irish, and just the quantity of London Irish kind of outside backs who are playing elsewhere in the Premiership.
Phenomenal.
They've got some pretty handy outside backs on the park at the moment, but there's a huge number that have come through there that have gone elsewhere. So I think incentivizing that it seems like a positive thing. I'm with you, Mark.
But I think if you can do it for one, you can probably do it for many. And sort of London Irish are proving this, because some of the best outside backs in the country are not playing at London Irish. Watson, Cock and a Singer, maybe.
JJ
is phenomenal.
Lewington.
Lewington's another one.
Marland.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Marland Yard. That would be another one. Yeah. Now you're looking at London Irish, and they've got Parton. Is it Parton?
Tom Parton.
Yeah. Arundel.
Loader, Ollie Hassel-Collins.
Oh, Loader. Loader's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Brilliant, yeah.
Yeah,
brilliant.
And they just carry on coming. And then you've got...
Mini JJ. By the way, he is fantastic.
He is, isn't he? The way he takes off is phenomenal.
Well, Mini JJ, and he's not playing at London Irish, is another good example, but Mini Thokonasinga.
Yeah.
Do you know,
I would look at it a different way, Mark. I'd say, like, if you're producing these lads, you get to choose which ones you keep and which ones Bath pay £300,000 of their salary cap to. And I think, that's how I'd do it.
I guess... I guess the thing like you probably have to look at is you get these players and they come through. Say that the Quinns team that won, not the Quinns team that won now, the Quinns team that won in, was it 2006?
Yes.
You know, and all their players come through together, and then all of a sudden, you know, the players that were demanding 150s are then demanding 250s at the time.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden that squad almost had to get taken apart, didn't it? Because Quinns then dipped for however long, because I'm sure they did it properly and they realised they couldn't keep. They had their six or seven England stars that all probably wanted the uplift that they deserved, and then they couldn't probably bring in the big names that they wanted to because everyone wanted that uplift at the same time.
Yeah,
and they've stuck to the rules, and they probably had to take that part of squad a little bit and come through with a new generation, which they have done. And I guess that's the thing that Sarri's probably never did didn't come through, did they? With like they didn't have to take the squad apart, which is the difference.
That's exactly right.
Because Exeter right now,
yes,
is happening. Exactly, happening to Exeter as we speak.
Yeah, but I think when you look at it, what you're seeing at Exeter and what you're seeing at London Irish and at Leicester Tigers are great at this, is more development. So I guess the argument would be, well, where's the reward for developing players if they can just go elsewhere? Well, the reward is you get loads of good players at a much cheaper price, and you've got to do it every single year. And then let them go, and in Leicester's case, buy them back when they're 37 or whatever it is. But it does work for them. It does work.
Yeah.
So
that's the model.
Yeah.
So, Mark, obviously we're three games in, or two games in for some clubs, as we mentioned. If you were going to look forward to later in the season, and bearing in mind the conversation we've just been having about the salary cap biting and biting different teams at different times because of the way that they signed up players when the reduction got introduced, if you were looking forward and as a good test for how the salary cap will affect teams looking to Europe, of the teams that are going to be playing in the Champions Cup, of course Gloucester are going to go very far, but how would you rate other English clubs' chances of getting into the latter stages of the Champions Cup?
It's probably tough, isn't it? I don't know what the run is exactly, but teams are probably going, you know, probably coming off four or five Premiership weeks or five or six Premiership weeks to then rock into two Champions Cup games.
Yeah,
I know it's always documented, isn't it, that we don't get the same rest that the Irish teams get, that this teams get. But yeah, I'm not that bothered. Honestly, it doesn't really bother me that all that sort of stuff about the rest and the this, because I actually think more and more these days, if anyone was to ask me, I think if you play a lot of rugby for your team, you get really well looked after. You get if you play, you get a lot of rest. End of.
Like, okay.
No coach wants to put team players on the pitch for, you know, unless you're Lewis Ludlow and you want to play 28 games a year with destroy your body year on year. But most players will get looked after by their clubs. If you play a lot of rugby, not many fall into that middle ground anymore where you're probably in and around the match day 23 and then there's a week where they want to change things, play Prem Cup, and you still have to play that. Those days are sort of gone now. I think you see the Prem Cup teams that went out this week, they were probably a good example of teams using the opportunity, weren't they? Mm-hmm. You didn't see anybody having to double up, really. You didn't see anybody, not many who were on the starting for that one, then on the bench for their team at the weekend. I don't think, anyway. I might be wrong there, but
no, you're pretty much spot on there.
The only one that I'm aware of was, and it was because of Joe Marler's injury, but it was Santiago Garcia Bota, who came in. I think he played 70 minutes at the weekend and then came in and played.
Good lad.
Started.
Hogard as well. There's a nosy thing. Hogard, I realised, did that actually as well, didn't he?
Ah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So not many.
I think generally the point is that if you play a lot of rugby for your team, most DORs these days look after people.
But you are one of the rare rugby players who really enjoys playing rugby. I'm not sure there's that many people that like playing rugby quite as much as you do.
Do you think?
Yeah,
I'd like to think there's still people out there who don't.
There's one or two of them. I mean, I say one or two of them. There's not one or two of them. There are a few of them. But I'm always amazed by how many players don't enjoy it as much as I assume that they would.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God. I guess it went through a stage of not being cool to be sort of obsessed with what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
But then a bit that I think that became a thing. You know, not do you watch the game at the weekend? Oh no, no, I don't really watch rugby. When secretly, you know, they're at home watching,
nosing it
every clip, every single clip around.
Listening to the Egg Chasers rugby podcast, yeah, of course.
Yeah, without doubt, it just comes up on a Monday morning. But openly, I bought that PRTV pass for the season, that £90 pass, whatever it was, because I was thinking, well, what if I get if there's one game a weekend out of that, then I'm going to watch it, aren't I? it's just guaranteed that I'm going to find a way to watch one of them at a weekend on the if it's not on BT. So I don't know. I think also the bit that gets me about that one is I think it's now become cooler again because, you know, the people right at the top, like, you know, your likes of Marcus, people like that, who are obsessed with the game, you know, watch everything and you know, like they'd say on Sky Sports, a student of the game.
Yes.
But those people, those blokes on Sky Sports, when they talk about football, you know, your Jamie Carragher's, Gary Neville's, all those, in my head, they made it cool to be obsessed with your sport again.
That's interesting. I never really thought that. One of the things...
Roy Keane talking about being obsessed daily, all that sort of stuff, makes you think, well, hang on, if it's okay for Roy Keane to be obsessed with his game, then why are people pretending in rugby that they're not that obsessed when actually they're watching every game at home?
Well, because James Haskell said it wasn't cool. James Haskell will call you a nose, and I think you still would, to be fair.
So it's right, because we're part way through a question on your Champions Cup. But I've got one very this is fantastic because I love nosing off like this. But one very quick question before we get into that would be who would be the top three rugby noses who are playing right now? Like you mentioned Marcus Smith there.
Apparently Freddie Clarke is one.
Oh really?
Oh my god. Yeah, absolutely. He's the other way around. So he'd be watching like highlight reels of players he's playing with or against. You know, that sort of not necessarily just watching to I like to watch it like every weekend. I'd happily watch it without the commentary on and just make my own thoughts on the game.
Yeah.
He wants to watch it just to find his... I've said to him, Fred, you played 100 games now. You don't need to Austin Healey saying how good you are in a more. But, who else is a big old Norse at the club? Harry Elrington, big Norse. These are just boys from our club. When I say Norse, I'd say Marcus goes into the sort of the student of the game type category. You know, and he makes like watching and wanting to talk about it. Like that, it's just... That's why he's brilliant, isn't it? Because he's obsessed with it. Which, yeah, I'd like to think I am with rugby. I'm just not as good as him. So.
Well, I'll tell you, someone who watches a lot of rugby is Max Ojomo. Rugby, yeah, loves it, absolutely loves it. Back to the studying thing, and we will get back to your Champions Cup question, Phil, and we will treat it with the seriousness that it deserves.
Well, it doesn't really, but we'll pay it lip service in a few minutes.
And we will need to obviously review some of the games too.
Nah.
So I was talking to an agent this week, and we were talking about fly halves at study. And I kind of thought it might be, as the salary cap's tightening, these lads want as many strings to their bow as possible. So if you can get the impression that you are really studious and that the only way to catch up with you as a fly half is for you too to do 6,000 hours of studying, you'll never catch up. It's almost like a barrier to entry to other fly halves. You know, you need the older guy who's putting the hours. And I don't know if it makes that much difference. Maybe it does, but maybe it doesn't. Maybe there's a diminishing return for the more you do.
There'll definitely be an inflection point after which there is diminishing returns. But you could probably still put a lot of effort in. Like Borthwick was always the line out nose, wasn't he? The one who was studying everything on it. Sorry, Mark, go on.
I'd say there's an interesting age gap whereby so these young fly halves these days, they don't know anything other than the defences that we're playing against now. Which I always think is interesting. Like they just expect line speed. They just expect ball watching defences. So there was a period where people who played with the old defences, I think, struggled to adapt and understand. And now you're seeing players who've just generally played against these defences for the last 4 or 5 years now. They are learning how do you get on top of these defences. What's the way? Like you said before, it's less of a surprise that suddenly you're going to get monstrous line speed. and you're going to get inside pressure as a ball player. So those sorts of things, that you, it's probably just not a surprise anymore, and you can learn to anticipate it. And that's probably going back to your point earlier about why people are scoring more tries, is because, like I say, it's less of a surprise. And if you practice that every day in training, you're less sort of shocked on a Saturday when you do get big line speed.
That's probably a very nice way to sort of round off why we've got 80 points in every single game.
Yes. Yeah, because it's people are more used to seeing exactly what they're seeing, so they become accustomed to the picture that's in front of them. But Mark, does that not present a potential opportunity for you as a defensive unit to change to change the picture? not all of the time, but like almost on a rotation, like one in three, you just totally change the picture.
I think you get massive payout of it. You get, if you've got the balls to sometimes do something completely drastic for one off, and then, you know, whether it's just letting someone fly or sending the nine round the back on a scrum as a, you know, as a rabbit to chase their nine or whatever it is, and doing it and committing to it, I think you get big payout of it. But it's committing to it and having the balls to pull the trigger, because, like I said, everything's contextual in this league at the moment, and if you do that when the game's on a knife edge and you try and make a big play and it goes wrong, you've got to answer for it. I mean, you're the D leader's got to answer for that on Monday morning as to why they've made that call.
I had some weird thoughts this weekend about exactly. I wasn't going to mention this when I found out that you were going to be on the pod, Mark, but seeing as we've gone down this little rabbit hole, I might do.
Please do.
Now, box kicking is such an important part of the game at the moment. Some people criticise it, but when it's done right, it's beautiful.
It is.
I was thinking about box kicking this weekend. So it's so predictable. The predictability of the box kicking is to its detriment, because as soon as you see the caterpillar, the back three gets into its position. As soon as you see the nine just slowly working the ball back, you know exactly what's coming. So I think a great skill to use very, very, very sparingly would be you teach one or maybe several of your forwards to box kick. And when they're set up at the back of a ruck,
so like,
imagine Dave Ewers is at the back of the ruck. He is 100% going to pick and go.
Yes.
But what if he's not? What if he puts in a beautiful box kick? And what if, actually, it's not even that beautiful. It doesn't go anywhere near where he intends it to. That's changing the picture even more than you were originally anticipating.
So I think you've got two dangers here.
There's lots of dangers. There's lots of dangers.
Three dangers. Okay, so first danger is obviously the skill level of the forward. But don't worry about that, because we've coached them to do it perfectly.
Well, even if it's not perfect, that may, it's adding an extra layer of unpredictability to something that's already unpredictable. So that's fine by me.
Well, here's the other, well, I'll skip the second one. I'll go straight to the third one. I think danger might be referees looking at the picture. So as they are sort of forming ready for their box kick, and Dave Ewers is looking at the ball about to kick it, I think where the ball ends up before a scrum half kicks it, the referee allows that because the scrum half is there and he thinks the scrum half knows what he's doing. If it was at Dave Ewers' feet, I bet he'd call it out. Because he's like, oh, well, Dave, come on, Dave. I mean, you can't possibly be lining up for a box kick.
Well,
agreed. Honestly, my dad makes observations about the game all the time. And I sort of don't really have an answer for him. Like, he'll say something like that. Like, he'll go, well, that ball's out there. And I go, yeah, it's out. But we don't really play like that anymore. So that ball's short in the ruck. And he'll go, but the ball's out. I go, yeah, but the ref sort of lets you get away with that being in the ruck. So don't worry about that, Dad.
Yeah,
but he does those annoying. He picks out a few bits where I go like, "Dad, I've not really got an answer for you there. If I'm honest, like, it's just how the game is."
It's like
a good question.
It's like feeding in the scrum. It just happens. No one cares about it.
No, I don't. You know, obviously, you have to be very respectful because the refs get told to pick up for that for 2 weeks of the season, don't they?
Yes, they do. They do.
For 2 weeks, someone will get a yellow card for that. Well, but the rest of the time's fine.
Well, I mean, that's one of the perverse things about rugby, how the laws obviously can't be bent or changed. Well, they can. Well, officially they can't. But then we only get directives to do exactly that. I mean, literally, if directives are not bending the laws, I don't know what are. Enforce these laws properly. Okay, so we've been bending them ever since. So
when you say that about the box kicking out, you know, the one thing of it is, in rugby, we all know that wing's set back. He might even have a number eight back there with him. Regardless of how slow that caterpillar is set up, the skill of putting that ball on top of him and him still having to go up for an aerial contest. My God, that's all right. I would hate to have to do that.
Yeah.
I think it's such a skill.
And I think it's amazing to watch. I think people don't appreciate it. I mean, what did Stuart Barnes write this week that they should limit to 6 kicks? Or I was like,
kicks from hand in the game. I've not read.
Trying to stay relevant.
That is definitely true.
But this is just not a thing. I mean, every single game had about 80 points, and we are in the era when I think now box kicking is almost as important to a nine as the pass. Maybe in some cases more so.
And the game, we've not touched on it yet, but the East Midlands Derby.
I want to talk about this one next.
It was a brilliant game. There were some fantastic tries scored by both teams. But if you watch the first 5 minutes, I bet Stuart Barnes was hating it. He was tearing his hair out because both teams were feeling each other out by allowing kicks to see how it's going, where the defence is moving, where's the space. And then both Mitchell and Furbank used it beautifully in that opening 20 minutes because they were able to move the Leicester back three around. They were able to analyse the space. They got Leicester thinking there was another kick coming and then bang, they were gone.
Yeah. You know, if London Irish do high-speed, exciting outside backs, Northampton do medium-speed, extremely skilled players just as well as anyone.
That back line's brilliant, isn't it? The balance they have, the sort of the way they can cut teams apart, and they're all on the same wavelength. I think the way they're all on the same wavelength is a bit that does it for me. They're a really nice team to watch. When they're ticking, they're really nice.
Just break down. This is just a question to you off the fly here, so you know, feel free to answer it fully. Just break down the contrast that you see between Leicester Tigers and Northampton, because I thought that the beauty of this game was the contrast of these two teams.
I can only say. I'm going to say based on the clips I've seen. I've not seen the whole thing. I've just watched the 10-minute BT bit, so that's tough for me to answer because I normally like to see the bits that lead to tries. I don't really care how the actual tries are scored.
That's interesting.
I don't really, you know, the finishes and the final pass, but I won't be able to give you a full answer, but what I will... I've got an interesting bit that I wanted to discuss with you about when you were talking about that kicking.
Yeah.
But I'll let you carry on with that game first and then come back to it if you want.
Go for it now, I think.
Well, so it feels like the persona around kicking, tell me if this is wrong, but like the it's okay for Sarries and Leicester to win trophies and play in that manner for years and play and be tactically brilliant. You know, that's how it would be perceived as tactically brilliant. But when the rest of us do it, it's going like, well, you lot should probably run the ball and hang yourselves more often to keep an exciting game. But when the teams who sort of have won the trophies by doing it, you know, Quinn's obviously the exception. Leicester had a different style, but teams generally that win stuff have been that over the last 10 years, haven't they? But now other teams, you know, now generally the other teams have started to do similar-ish game plans. It's now a negative, so it's almost like the teams right at the top who are competing to win it, they can do it. But what now will hammer everyone because you lot should carry on playing an exciting brand of rugby that's not going to win a tournament. But you
play for me, not for you.
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
Whereas I just think it's a little bit different.
I think there's a few things going on here. And I'll use a line-out analogy, which is if you're throwing to the front continuously and mauling it, and that's where you get your success, well, you'll carry on throwing it to the front and mauling it until somebody stops you. I think what we've seen with Saracens winning their trophies and how they've played, let's exclude the salary cap stuff, but what you've seen is a successful tactic that nobody has successfully combated. And so why on earth would you change stuff? Now, when other teams have tried to copy it, and they have done now, I think, very successfully, you know, a lot of teams are very good at box kicking, you can see all the powers that be and all of the rugby intellect going into solving the puzzle. So I think the answer to that will be... if you want to get rid of box kicking, you don't ban it, you just have more of it because someone then will figure out the antidote to box kicking. And I think that's exactly what we're sort of seeing now. And also, you see a variation of it. I was watching, it was this game actually, Van Portfleet. The way he kicks the ball is a thing of beauty. It's really, really quite awesome.
It was talked about in comms as well about just the sheer height that he gets on it, which obviously gives the chasers, the defence, much more time to get under it.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mark, to your point, it's I kind of share your frustration a little bit, because I think you're right. I think there is this, from what I see, it's exactly, I'll just be reiterating your point, but there's almost a tolerance of it, or a celebration of it more, from the top teams where they're successful, but anyone else tries to do it and it's heavily criticised. And I think it's such a short-sighted thing, because if you watch, right, both this game, because we're talking about it, but Northampton Saints kicked a lot at times, but they kicked when Leicester had put more men back, that allowed them to create, or it allowed them space to do other things.
Yeah.
And similarly, Leicester kicked a lot early on, but when the Northampton defence and attack, but the Northampton team was tiring late on in that first half and late on in that second half, Leicester were happy running from anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's short-sighted just to say kicking is bad, because it's what does a successful kicking strategy then allow you to do? That's what people should actually look at.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But they don't.
And that's where we have to put context on, like, the people driving the team. You know, so long as the people who are driving the team, I've got the mindset of, and you'd always go back to him, I think he's still the best around for this sort of thing. I don't think Fordy goes into a game going, we'll kick the ball here and we'll run the ball here. I think he just decides, if it's on to shift the ball from his own line, and that's the calculated decision, he shifts the ball from his own line. Mm. And if it's on to kick the ball on their line, he kicks the ball on their line, because he just generally makes the right rugby decision at the right time.
Yeah,
and not everyone's going to have the intellect of George Ford when it comes to rugby, but that's generally what you hope that you can, if you can coach your 10, your decision makers, that that you make the right, roughly the right decision most of the time, you're going to be on track, aren't you? That's what I'd like to see more often than just saying, right, you kick the ball from here, you kick the ball from here. You'd like, that's the way it's being sort of spoken about in comms and what you're seeing a lot of from these rugby writers. It just sounds like players are told, you kick the ball from here, whereas I actually don't think that's true at all. I think coaches are saying, you know, make the right decision in the scenario, and you see a 13-man wall in front of you, you're going to find backfield space.
Just on that George Ford point, the semi-final last year, Leicester Tigers played Northampton Saints again, if you remember it. And George Ford, I made this point on the pod after the game, George Ford scored from the 22 after, it was about with 20 minutes to go, something like that. He gave a little show and go. That was the only time in that game that he ran the ball.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Every single other time, he either passed it or kicked it. But to his rugby intellect, the one time it was on, he
found it.
He found one from one, isn't he?
Yeah, one from one. One run, one try. And it's just an amazing example of exactly the point you're making.
That's why he's the best in the business, yeah.
Well, one more point on Saracens, which I think might explain the attitude towards him, is I don't think they care. So, if you don't care, and your only obligation is to your fans, and the fans are like, well, we embrace this identity.
We like winning.
Yeah, we like winning. So, you know, go and do what you want to do. We'll do what we want to do. And eventually, if someone is completely shameless about what they're up to, the criticism no longer works. So, I think there's an element of that as well. They found their identity, and that will be it. I mean, if running the ball from deep was like frowned upon, I think Bristol Bears would still probably do it. So it's just finding your identity and sticking with it.
I think the one thing with Saracens is they can take you apart in a number of different ways. I think gone are the days of just being able to put the ball up the air and do it. I think they can now. They have got the all core game. I know they say they're moving towards it, but I think they've had it for a few years now. I think they can go back to type when they need to and stick it up, you know, stick up front and get Billy and Mako around the corner. But my God, I think they can take you apart in a number of different ways.
They're pretty good, aren't they?
I think looking at the best teams in the world at the moment, well, if you say internationally, all of them can do that. Like New Zealand can do it, France can do it, Ireland can do it. They can beat you up front, but they can run it around you when they want to as well. They can stretch you.
Now, back to the Tigers-Northampton game. Yes. Here was my takeaway. And here's why I wanted to talk about the contrast of the two teams. It strikes me that they are both working on pressuring the other team, which of course is what you're meant to do in rugby. But Northampton are very much into scoreboard pressure. They are trying to score and they're trying to run away with it. I saw the score of this game before I watched the game, and then I watched the entire game. And I was watching, I was like, where are the points going to come from?
Where are Leicester going to get the points
from? Because you get to like 80 minutes and they're still on like 3 points. Like, where is it going to happen? And you can see Leicester, I mean, I'm sure they don't want to concede the points to start with. And I'm sure they would like to have scored more points before then. But they seem to me perfectly content just to keep squeezing, keep following the process. And then eventually the implosion from Northampton in the last 10 minutes was unbelievable to watch. And that's just a different type of applying pressure via the game.
So my takeaway is, I think it's similar to yours, but I'll probably phrase it in a slightly different way. I thought that overall, because I actually did the same as you. I saw the scoreline and then watched it the full game back afterwards. So Northampton Saints were incredibly energy inefficient. So they worked really hard early on. And Dan Bigger was actually saying to the ref, I can't remember who the ref was in this, he said to the ref early on, you can't stop us with playing tempo. It was Carl Dixon, wasn't it?
You can't
stop us playing tempo. You can't stop us playing tempo. And they were all about tempo, 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 keeping the pace up early on. Whereas Leicester were very, exactly to your point.
Did Dan Bigger say that?
He said, yeah, you can't stop us playing tempo.
Oof.
I know.
Watch me.
Exactly. But Leicester were the opposite. They were very happy to let Northampton do exactly what they wanted to do to keep the tempo up, and they were very energy efficient. They were not overcommitting to the rooks. They were not being moved around the park too much, sometimes to their detriment, like with the Mitchell and the Freeman tries. But it allowed them in the last 10 minutes of the first half and the last 20 minutes of the second half, they were the team with all of the energy, all the impetus, and they just, in both those periods, they were, I think Northampton were lucky not to only concede 7 in those last 10 minutes of that first half, and they probably got what was coming, particularly with the yellow card pressure that came in the last 20 minutes of the second half.
Absolutely. I love the trust shown by Leicester just to stick to what they've been told to do, because they've obviously been told to do this. And I guess if you were less experienced as a team, you would just want to fling it around and score immediately and try and combat what Northampton have already done. But that's what I found most impressive, the trust that they have in the coaches and then the discipline to pull it off. I think it's amazing.
Mm. It's a good game to watch. It's good fun one.
Had one more very, very insightful point to make. Yes, it's not that insightful, but still. I genuinely consider... Well, no. I thought that Mitchell's weakness in his game was his lack of fitness, because he looks like he slows down massively in the second half. It turns out, I think that being the Northampton scrum half might be the hardest role in the Premiership.
It might be like the equivalent of the Tour de France, doing that in... 80 minutes.
Yeah,
they need to sign Kipchoge, don't they? That sort of thing. I don't think it's a lack. I don't think it's a lack of fitness for. I think he's.
I don't either. Now.
I think he's as fit as anyone. I know that was said a few times on comms at the back end of last season, wasn't it, by certain people? But I don't believe that in the slightest. I reckon he's really. I actually think he is brilliant, isn't he?
Yeah,
he is top draw, like a constant threat. I'd say his all round game. There's not many as complete as him at the moment.
No, I think
and that was probably based on last season as well. Really,
completely agree. I think he's playing some brilliant rugby, and I completely agree with the fitness point. It is, I said it before. Northampton were energy inefficient, or like they work so hard, but they don't get the scoreboard rewards for working so hard early on in the game.
Yeah, good game. Right, talking of good games. Mark, have you got any questions?
How did you boys get on this weekend? How are your teams?
Oh,
who? Talk H. Well, I'm glad you asked. We beat Aspall 62-14.
Did you play ones?
Of course I played ones.
You were maybe debating because they were so successful without you last weekend.
Yeah, well, you can only go so far without great leadership. So I had to be drafted back in. But yeah, we are on 34 league wins in a row. No?
Very nice.
So we think we've got the longest winning streak in the country in league wins.
The JB Cup?
Yeah, we actually own the JB owns the JB Cup. So cheers, everyone.
And how did Marlow get on this weekend?
Tim's boy's Marlow. Yeah, we don't like Marlow around here, mate. But Tim is a massive fan. I think they might have. Did they win?
I don't know.
Yeah, we don't like Marlow.
Yeah.
No one likes Marlow, which is a general rule.
All I know is everyone hates Marlow.
Everyone hates him. Everyone.
How did Aylesbury get on?
Aylesbury won.
Yes.
Yes, there we go.
Amazing.
So yeah, Tim will like this, because if this is the end of our lower league club chats, actually, Mark, you're a North West lad.
I was about to say, if you're 34 wins in a row, is that just constant promotions, is it?
Yeah, pretty much. And reorganisations is the other one.
Yeah, there was a slight reorganisation of the league that scuppered your promotion.
Yeah, we should definitely be level 6. But we've stayed in a league which was officially level 7. But anyone who played in it was like...
What is level 7? What does that look like these days?
It doesn't look very good, mate. I'm not going to lie to you.
No?
It's not great, no. So I've spent most of my time playing level 6. So when you're at Sedge, what level would that have been, for context?
No, I helped them get relegated from the Championship. So that was good, lad. Their heights. Yeah, yeah. I think I only played five or six games there at the back end of that. That was the champ year. When the champ went from 16 to 12, that back in the day.
Did you play? Is that the one where you all got money for losing or beating Newbury?
Was that?
Yeah.
Oh, were you playing in that game, Mark?
Yeah, 250 quid, yeah, for losing that game, yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely no shame whatsoever.
No, that was the one that we won. So, Mark, you definitely won't remember this, but we did actually play together for Sedgley.
I've been reminded this before, but we actually, we did beat them down there, and then there was a massive social after it. So
yeah.
I think that was to finish 13th, was it, or 14th out of the 16?
Yeah, we finished one above Newbury. In that game, it was... And there was a little thing with... If you finished third from bottom, you got a parachute payment of 10 grand, and if you finished fourth from bottom, it was 15 grand or something like that. So Dave Smith, chairman, put a few quid in the kitty for the trip to the church.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah. Oh, you know what? Honestly, some happy times then. And also, just getting 250 quid to sit on the bench at Otley away was the highlight of my first year of sale. So
I remember that Otley away. That was like...
I think, come on.
That was...
My family came to watch me at Otley away. I think, come on, in the pissing down rain.
It was freezing up there as well.
You got to go fish and chips after Otley, though, didn't you?
Oh, that was good.
So which teams have you played for in the North West amateur teams? Or were you just straight into...
Lim and Kersal.
Kersal, really?
Yeah, Lim was like my real junior stuff. And then Kersal was like... Colts rugby. I don't think I actually ever played a game for Kersal first team.
Did you play for Lim first team?
No, neither. Neither first team. Because I went straight to Sale, didn't I? So we had a good team, Colts team at Kersal, and then sort of dismissed. It's tough, isn't it? Sort of dismissed. I've got quite a lot of mates who are still playing for some of those teams now.
Yeah.
Kersal, a couple of like Mac. A couple over at Chester now, actually. So just chasing that coin around the chat. Yeah, you'll probably have an opinion on that as well. I'd have thought. Here he is.
Look, I think if you want to pay your players, more power to you. But it's a tricky, it's a dicey thing to be doing.
Oh, I know.
But
they were my teams. Yeah, I loved it. I'd love to get back more. But
so Lim this week ended. The team with the second longest winning streak.
Stockers.
Yeah, in the country. They beat Stockport.
Wow.
So, really?
Yeah, Stockport got to level 5. Really, really good setup there. But Lim are flying now.
Dean Schofield's father-in-law is involved.
That's there, right, it is.
I see him at Cheltenham every year. And I always have a good chat with him. Comes up to me at Cheltenham. Good bloke, really good bloke.
One of rugby's
junior days playing at Stockport. Yeah,
one of rugby's good guys to go for a beer with is Dean.
Mm. Oh yeah. Oh, he's one of the best, isn't he?
I think he was playing until last year. You know, he was definitely playing pre-COVID, playing for Stockport.
It just doesn't surprise. He could still do a job now in the Premiership, I imagine.
Probably.
And what a sign he'd be for a social as well.
Yeah. Would he just? Oh, just to, like, hang around with Dean Schofield's pretty cool. Just such a presence. Yeah.
Go to Mojo's with Dean Schofield.
And funnily enough, that's where I saw him last.
It's where I saw him last.
Yeah, well, Kurz, yeah, you should come up and see, because Kurz are one level ahead of us now, and I'm not sure if you saw level six now, it'd really look as level six did when you left it, unfortunately.
Okay.
But that's just, this is the way of the world.
Right, I can hear Tim.
No one's interested.
Ringing in our ears. So before we get back to the rugby, let me find this. Email. I've just lost it.
Have you got to read the emails from Tim? Have you?
There was quite a good email. It was about. Oh, I'm going to lose this now.
I'll have Tim tomorrow, and he'll read the emails like a professional broadcaster.
He's normally much better than this.
Okay, we done with the emails then? Thank you for
Tim,
all your emails.
Tim is going to kill me because I've lost the email. So the email was about, let me, we're going to have to edit this.
No, absolutely not.
I know you're not doing, here we go, from Will. Will, so he says, great pod, cheers. Blah, blah, blah. My girlfriend is an adoption lawyer.
Wow.
Here we go. This is one of our favourite things.
Yes, it is. Adopting Japanese executives.
Yes. Mark, did you know that Japan has the highest rate of adult adoption in the world?
Is that right?
It's because there's so many family-owned businesses that have been running for, well, in some instances, 1,000 years or more, that to keep what is now a 21st century multinational operating, you can't just have some spoiled rich kid taking on the business. So they adopt kind of the 30-year-old protege. this is like a common thing in Japanese culture now. Anyways, brilliant. An email related to that point from Will. So he says, just in case it's not clear, this is hypothetical and obviously I won't be doing it, but for argument's sake, if I were to adopt a highly rated, uncapped 20-year-old Tongan rugby player,
yes,
would they immediately become eligible to play for England? Also, if I was married to my Irish girlfriend, presumably our new child, who is the 20-year-old Tongan that they've just adopted, would immediately be eligible for either team?
Yeah.
It's a great question.
Either of you got any thoughts on that matter?
Do you know any good 21-year-old Tongans? Anyone in the academy, Mark?
Any Tongans in the academy? No, but if, I mean, I'm just trying to work out whether that'd be legitimate. Would that fly?
Well, not for you, because you've got an England cap, mate, so you can't
get adopted.
I'm just thinking, the Scotland coaches were in last week, and I was shouting at a few boys who had been capped outside the 3-year window, shouting them, going like, he's available. I won't say the names of who, but I was going, he's available soon, he's available next year. Yeah, so that's going to be an interesting one. I reckon that's going to start to happen as well. People are going to start to be on the move.
Oh, 100%. And as they should do.
Why not? It's a short career, isn't it?
Do you know what winds me up is, I know the coaches were over in Gloucester, but I know the coaches say things to lads, and I think they should shut up. I think the club should ban the coaches coming into the clubs unless they're going to talk to existing capped players, because they'll come in and say, hey, come and play one game for Scotland. I think you're going to be a 50-cap hooker. Well, okay, well, give me 50, you know, pay me like a 50-cap hooker. It's ridiculous. And then these boys go back to the club and say, well, the international coach just told me I'm going to be a 50-cap hooker, so I need a pay rise.
I reckon you're talking about one specific example of sale there in particular, aren't you?
Well, I mean, there are numerous examples, mate. There are numerous examples around the area.
Read between the lines on that one.
Yeah.
Right, now we're done with the emails. Mark, did you watch this afternoon's game?
Yes, I've seen this afternoon.
Oh, this afternoon, okay.
I couldn't believe what I came back to, though. We had a big family Sunday roast. We had quite a few family here from our missus' side. And then watched the first half an hour, saw the live score, had to then go back. I was like, oh, this is done and dusted. Went back then to watch it. It was incredible. I was very impressed, actually. Very impressed by the Quinn's turnaround. I actually didn't really see, if I'm massive honest, I didn't see that coming.
Me neither.
I thought Exeter
looked good early on. Yeah,
it cost me £200 today. I put a fiver on Quinn's at exactly the right time.
And well, exactly the wrong time as well, because they lost.
Yeah, well, true. Yeah, exactly.
So you lost £5.
Just burns it. But you know, Christ, who do you think's better, Murley or Liner?
Oh God, that's tough to answer, isn't it? I think I think I'd like to see Murley get a little bit more of. I think they're both. Don't get me wrong. I think they're both very good.
Agreed.
And I think Line has been obviously given a little bit of a chance to be in the squad in and around it. I feel like Murley probably just deserves an opportunity to be talked about a bit more. Okay. If I'm honest, I think he's very good. I think he's got everything, and he scores loads for a really. I know he scores for a really good team. But he scores loads, and they clearly trust him enough to be on the wing for them.
Mm.
I'd just like to see what he could do, really, because I think he's very good.
I've got a really tricky question for you, so I don't mind if you don't answer it fully, or you can avoid it, I guess. But how would you like to play? What kind of role do you think you could bring to that Quinn's back line with the skill set that you've got? And not just with Marcus inside you, but watching Northmore run around today was just a thing of beauty.
Northmore,
he was good, wasn't he?
Or Marchant.
Yeah, Marchant is such a good player. Such a good player.
I think Marchant is brilliant. I think he's sort of got it all.
Hasn't he?
And probably just needs to be, whatever. I don't know what the plan is, obviously. It's not for any of us to guess what the plan is, but I think he's... I couldn't believe his strike rate, but it doesn't surprise me in a way because he seems to score every week. But when he scored today, and it said 48 tries in 105 games, something like that.
Wow,
it was. Don't say that's exactly right, but it's around that. And I was like, that's incredible. That when I saw that, you might want to fact check that, but that's an incredible strike rate. But the more you think about it, he gets over constantly, doesn't he?
Yeah. He's, I mean, the try he scored today was just wonderful. The finish
genius,
was just... Is, what can you say? It's awesome.
Yeah.
It reminded me a bit of...
Go on.
Yeah, his touch. I can't remember the game last year, but he set up a try for Hugh Jones where he was right out on the right-hand touchline.
Yes, I know what you mean.
And he kind of caught it as he's jumping
Northampton away,
and he kind of catches it. And
there's the nose, isn't it?
Yeah. It back inside. Beautiful.
I think he's brilliant, and he's always in it. There's a massive skill to it. People don't realise there's a skill to being in and around tries. It doesn't just fall to him. You've got to, Ashley's done it for years, hasn't he? Like, other wingers are as fast and as fit and whatever as Ashley, but he's just in and around it the whole time.
Mm.
And March has got that. He's got a real skill for scoring. And not just scoring as well. He made that Northmore try today, didn't he, with a chip off Marcus. So I think he's really good. They don't know. When you say, what can I add to that ballot? They don't need me.
Well, okay. Well, I guess a different way of thinking of it, with your role and the way that you play, are you looking to add to what Marcus Smith does, or are you just looking to be like a part of what he tells you to do? Are you trying to make him better, or do you just listen to?
I think you've got to. I think one of the things that's brilliant about Marcus is he wants to engage. When I've been training with him mostly, and the few times I've got to be around him playing and training, and he wants to engage and ask you, which I find, I've been around a lot of good fives, but he's really interested to ask you your thoughts on this and how you're going to run this and then discuss things. I found him, boys with the club when I first got back from England and they were saying, oh, blah, blah, who impressed? I thought he was next level good, like that good. I really don't think there's a flaw to his game. Most fives have got something that they do brilliantly. I think his mindset's brilliant as well. Like he wants to play in that positive way. You can see it's infectious to be around.
Yeah,
and I think it helped me with being around the likes of him and March. They sniff an opportunity, and like at times that's probably been my biggest flaw is when you played in this is years gone by, a team where I've been thinking about the next phase. They're always in that phase that's playing.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, they are. Yeah, they're constantly in that moment, which is something that you feel like. Whatever age you are, you can always take things from players, and that's probably what I took from them mostly.
That's really interesting, because when I watch you as a player, and I'm sure Phil will back me up here, that's the thing which we would say about you, which is it's the intelligence of your game, which we assume that you are one step ahead of everyone else. That's how you get the passes away or the offloads or find the space.
Yeah, I probably had a mindset of thinking, trying to dictate how the game is going. So as it moves away from you, start to load things going back towards you. Whereas Marcus at times is just in that moment, he might see an opportunity to finish it with that phase rather than thinking about the next phase. So that's probably what I took from being around them, and I've tried to add. I guess it's just, it is good to be, to go and see players like that and go like, right, what have they got that's brilliant? And that is, he's got a lot that's brilliant, don't get me wrong, and trust me, you can't take it all off him, but that's one thing I thought was amazing.
Well, something else which I think is amazing is the revitalisation of Exeter. They've got some great players, but they've lost a lot of beef during the summer. I think Rob Baxter's done an incredible job of rebuilding this pack, because it looks like they're there for the long term now. A lot of them are very young. The way that they're playing is fairly dynamic, and also it's got the old brutality of Exeter. I'm very impressed, I've got to say.
It is a rebuild, isn't it?
Yeah.
And with the news coming out about Sam Simmons, that which was confirmed today, and the rumours about Jack Noel leaving as well, potentially to Claremont.
Is that where he's rumoured to go?
I've seen a rumour, I don't know if it's right or not, but what's his name? The brilliant Claremont winger /13.
Pernod.
Damien Pernod is apparently out of contract, so Jack Noel could be the replacement.
That's what I've heard.
Oh, God. I'm still having nightmares about him from the summer, actually, when he took the intercept off me, so I don't want him to come to Gloucester, yeah. No. I didn't know that about Knowlesy, but was the Sam Simmons one, was that confirmed today, was it?
Yeah,
confirmed by Ali Heifer today in comment. Okay. But then the rumour...
I mean, I just think with that sort of play, you can't blame him the slightest, can you? I think
I also think the time is right for him.
Yeah.
And do you know what? He might go into a few years there, and then he might come back and do a few... He's only, 27?
He might be a bit older than that now. I don't know.
I will tell you in 2 seconds.
Got a young family, hasn't he? Go and do a few years over there, maybe come back at
27.
Early 30s or...
Yeah.
He's 27. He will be 28 by the time he goes across, although he might actually... looking at it, so he'll be 28 in 2 months. So if he's eligible for the World Cup, which is currently unconfirmed, by the time he were to play his first game for Montpellier, he would be 29.
Yeah.
If he was eligible for the World Cup and he went to the World Cup, that is.
Both those extra wingers today, I thought were superb. I thought Woodburn had a great game.
He's
phenomenal.
Woodburn is a fantastic... So there's a few things he did. He's setting up for Tissunya's first try was lovely, coming round. The offload was fantastic. But his kick chase under the high ball, under the box, he's so good.
Yeah. How would you use wingers like Noel? Because he's not out and out fast. He's not a
smart, though, isn't he? He probably gets away with not being an absolute spur. He knows what he is. He's brilliant defensively. He's like an extra cent. You know, he's got the skill set of a cent.
He's like a seven.
He's got the ability at times to be a link player, which I don't think many wingers can do.
Yeah.
Like the ball Murley gave Northmore on the on that try that he hit the hard line. You know, they went out the back to Murley and played short to Northmore. Defensively wasn't amazing. There's a lot of movement, and Murley as a winger, there's not that many wingers who can actually do that, I'd say.
Yeah, agree.
And Knowlesy's one of them. Like, you could play him a ball at the back, he'd see the 15 from the opposition start to come up and he'd run the ball through. So, you know, whilst travelling laterally across the field, and I think he's got something different to all the others. Not everyone could be an absolute speedster. He's solid at every other bit, but he's brilliant. Like, he's brilliant rugby mind, I reckon.
When he's playing on the wing, they use him for England a little bit like this. They give him almost a free rein to pop up in that back line. I don't know if from your experience in there, this is what I've seen, to kind of come round, and because he's not as tied to a single position offensively or defensively when he's on the wing, he can pop up where he wants, and he'll throw a couple of picks and go in, he'll offer an inside ball off the 10, or he'll loop round like he did a little bit on that Northmore well, like Caden Murley did on that North. I'm getting Murley and North confused.
I think you're probably right, but I reckon it's probably not one of those things that's like coached to say, oh, Knowlesy, you go and do whatever you want. I think it's just an understanding that he is going to get around the ball. He's always going to get more touches than most wingers. Mm. And he's special close contact stuff. He's very, very good, very strong. And he is going to bust things. He's going to make things happen. So you're probably happier as a boss to say, right, well, I'm happy if you get an extra 10 touches to the other winger in close quarters. Mm. Because, yeah, like you said, he'll always make a couple of, whether it's dry or wet, you give him the ball in close quarters in the wet, he'll probably slip through something. Or he's done it for his whole career, hasn't he? Mm. It's not a surprise when he makes a bust from nowhere in the middle of the park.
Yeah, yeah. I don't like it, but I acknowledge it happens. But there are times, do you know when we spoke about Northampton, when they're all on the same page? Well, occasionally, when Exeter are allowed to play all of their senior guys, you've got that triad, haven't you, of Slade, Hogg, Knoll. And when they're all on the same page, they can be absolutely electric. Mm. But it just doesn't happen as frequently as I'd like to see it. Either selection, because of, you know, England rules or whatnot, and just sometimes the way Exeter plays just sort of restrains them a tiny bit.
And a bit of injury.
Yeah.
Knoll's he's had some bad injuries over the last few years.
Loving the work of Richard Capstick.
Yeah.
I thought Simmons was excellent when he came on, really added a bit of energy. And what I can't really decide after this game is I think Sale will probably be a top four team now. I've changed my mind massively on them. I think they're going to beat up everyone that they see, except for Gloucester. I think Leicester are a top four team now. All these teams are either top four teams or they're all going to finish seventh, right?
There's six or seven top four teams, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's mad. That is
mad. That is the problem. So you did have Sale in your top four.
No, I had them at...
You had them at fourth.
Did I have fourth? Have you got those,
I've got it in front of me now.
Who'd have my as my top four?
Sale in fourth.
Yeah.
Gloucester in third.
There you go, Mark.
There you are.
Leicester in second and Sarri's top.
Yeah.
Any changes to that right now?
Well, looking at today's game, I think both Harlequins and Exeter look like top four teams, but you know, they can't all be top four.
I had Gloucester, Quins, Saracens, and Leicester as
Gloucester
my
top.
No, other way around.
Freaky.
Gloucester sneaking in there ahead of Northampton and Exeter.
I mean, based on this, they could both easily.
It could be any.
Who knows?
It could be any.
They're all going to finish seventh.
Yeah.
I reckon we'll be having the conversation going into the last month. That's what it'll be again, won't it? You know. Yeah. You'd like to think all you can do is be in the conversation going into the... There'll be probably five or six teams battling out again for that. That was interesting last season. That became the sort of the most hotly talked about topic, wasn't it?
Mm.
Who's going to make the top four? You know, the top two had run away with it.
Yeah.
The bottom didn't matter because obviously there was no relegation. So it just became... That was the topic constantly.
Yeah. Because that was the focus.
It was interesting. That was probably the first time I'd seen that be the topic of conversation.
Yeah, it's usually all sorts of other things. But yeah, it is good to have the actual race for the top four discussed.
And with relegation not being an option, it kind of limits one half of the table. Anyone below eighth you can forget about because it's irrelevant.
But like, if you've got seven or eight teams competing for the top four, you've done your job anyway. You don't need to talk about the other four teams.
Yeah.
Throw them in the bin. It's done.
Throw them in
it's
the
bin.
One thing from this game, I just mention it because he was brilliant. He scored the winning try. And some outrageous stats for a... Well, he was wearing seven, wasn't he? But he was a lock slash back row. His stats were 122 metres made, three clean breaks, seven defenders beaten, and madness. Obviously two tries. In which, the winning try, he made... what did he make? About 20 metres at the start of it and 30 metres at the end of it to win the game. Outrageous,
isn't it?
Chris Tishunza.
Which shows what happens if you put a big man wide.
So it's awful. I was watching it and I was going, just take the 2 points. Honestly, when Exeter were moving it on the line, I was going, oh, you just don't want to lose this point now. You don't, you know, I know it's negative, but just take your 2 points. And then they've kind of done that. I felt very negative in my rugby. My rugby views.
I had exactly the same thing going through my head, which was, wouldn't it be awful if they lost a point? Because we saw Bath do it on Friday night.
Oh, we'll can't wait to talk about that.
The same thing.
Well, have either of you ever played Madden on PlayStation or Xbox?
A long time ago.
No.
I know what it is, but...
So in Madden, they have these game modes. And this one is in maybe in university playing it. And the game modes are, they give you a scenario from a real game back in the day of an amazing two-minute drive. And I was watching extra, I was thinking, this is like a Madden scenario. If they manage to score from underneath their own post,
behind your own,
you know, you can put that on a computer game, and that is your challenge. You've got no time left. You can't drop the ball, and you've got to score against Harlequins. Good luck. Best of luck. Yeah, it was an all-time great moment in Sandy Park. I thought it was incredible.
It was. It really was. Now, we've got to talk about it, because JB, it costs you £200, as you said before. The forward pass. Mark, what's JB's biased. What's your view on that forward pass?
I mean, he should have passed it before contact, shouldn't he?
He should have done. Yeah. Although he's got a prop outside him. He's got Shickley. Although we know Shickley can move.
He's barely a prop, is he? He's a flyer. We've seen him move. I would be feeling hard done to if I was a Quinns player.
Yeah.
I feel like they wanted to sort of, they wanted that to be a try. I'd definitely feel hard done to if I was Quinns.
Yeah. But what about me?
Well, for your 200 notes, yeah, it's different, isn't it? I'd just be thinking, well, all this talk about hands going backwards, ball going forwards, like, the ball's clearly further forward when he catches it than it was when he left his hand.
Yes.
So,
I
don't know. I've given up with that rule these days. It's just basically look at the draw with what the ref decides.
Well, the problem with that rule, and this is an example of the problem with that rule. So it's the momentum rule. So if you're travelling forward, you can pass the ball backwards, but it will travel forward. The problem with that rule is where the player who passes the ball is immediately stopped, as Stuart Hogg was. Because if he was running, if he'd have continued running that pace, it would have looked fine. However, because he's immediately stopped, the ball then is caught further ahead of where he ends up.
That's a good point.
Now, initially, my first reaction was, there is no way that try is going to get given. I was absolutely certain. I was slightly disappointed because it was an amazing try, but I was certain it was going to come back. But then I softened, and I actually think probably, you'd be gutted if you're a Quinns player or fan, but probably Tempo made the right decision, which is, his decision on the pitch was try.
Yep.
It therefore needs to be clear and obvious to overturn the try. There is at least a question in my mind because of that momentum and Hogg getting stopped as to whether it is. I think it's probably 60-40 that it was a forward pass. And maybe it's more than that. Maybe it's 70-30. But it's not 100%. So
it's got to be clear. It's got to be clear evidence, isn't it?
I'm okay with the way it played out. But if I was a Quinns player or fan,
you've summed it up well there. That's actually the way. You know, I know a lot of it comes down to the ref's question and all this. So you have summed it up well that the way it was dealt with was probably right, wasn't it?
On balance, but if I was a Quinns player, I'd feel sick, absolutely sick, because you watch it and it goes forward.
Yeah, it was. Yes. I mean, you feel sick. For Quinns players, I was livid at the time, absolutely livid. It's not about me, is it?
Well, there is a nice little bit of Schadenfreude sitting here in the dungeon with you, being upset about your £200.
Well, good news, there are two teams that we know are not going to finish top four, and they both played on Friday night. Now, I know professionalism means we're all professional and nice about each other. How do you feel about Bath? Is there any remaining animosity, or is it super serious all of the time? And, you know, you will say things like, well, we concentrate on what we do and we don't really mind that Bath are the worst team in the Premiership.
So, what I'd say about that is, like, I reckon there's a lot of people, obviously, it is modern sport, all the rest of it. You know, a lot of us weren't from the area. But you can't help but know how much it means to the supporters, and therefore know how much they're enjoying it. There's no two ways about it that our fans will have enjoyed that last season. So, not necessarily to say the players love seeing it and all the rest of it, but like you want to keep your fans happy. We aren't those players who, especially when you've been here for a long time, yeah, you're not players who just say you love your fans. You know, you've been here for one season, oh, I love the fans. But like, everyone sort of knows our fans are a bit different, and they'll hammer you. They'll get rightly hammer you in a coffee shop to your face, and then at the same time they'll always stick up for you behind your back. All the, you know, the things that you want from your fans. Mm. And it's not just saying it, because I think a lot of people do just say that sort of thing, don't they?
But yeah,
I genuinely believe ours are different. Yeah, a few oddballs out there, which I absolutely love and embrace, but they're brilliant. And if that's brought them a bit of joy, then you can't help but smile about it.
So, you know, for instance, in training, say someone drops the ball, you're not saying, F off to Bath, mate, go on.
Oh, you've done a bath.
yeah, you've done a bath. That was pretty bath standard, mate.
I don't think there's anything like that, because also...
That's what I heard.
The flip side of it is, like, you've still got a lot... I've got quite a few mates down there, a lot of good mates down playing there, and you sort of can't quite put your finger on it, because the squad's still brilliant, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, it's...
And
it
I'm
is
still
good
waiting.
Squad.
I'm waiting for... And I've got no doubt that... I genuinely believe this. There's no doubt that it will be fine and it'll come good, because it's only a matter of time, you know. That is too good a squad to be down there for too long.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you, mate. I
do you think?
Yeah, I've changed my mind. I was kind of thinking about Bath, thinking they're going to come good. I am a massive fan of some of their players. Mm. But watching them on the weekend, I'm thinking, where is this team going to get the go forward from? And they just haven't got the power up front. I mean, if, God forbid, anything happens to Tom Dunn, what do they do next? They've got Dave Atwood toiling, but there's just not enough there up front, unfortunately.
I feel like, yeah, it's tough there. You're thinking, you know, they lost Benno again, Will Stewart, Sam Underhill.
Yeah.
There's a lot of players that are missing from that team that would give them, you know, a bit of bite, wouldn't they? A bit more bite. And it's hard. Everyone wants to pile on when they're at the bottom, but they have got a good squad on paper. And by saying that, last year they had a great squad on paper, didn't they?
Oh, they've got one of the best squads in the Premiership.
And last squad was even better. If you had like Faletau and Watson paper, it's better.
Yeah,
it's tough. It's really tough. But no, there's not really anything within our squad. But certainly, I can only imagine. You know, I know the fans. They enjoy match. That's the biggest match day of the year for them. I can only imagine that.
Were you a Gloucester player when Tavis Noyle got into that scrap?
The year before me. Yeah.
Oh, was it? That was brilliant TV. Yeah. That was brilliant watching.
Oh, yeah. That was a real hum bit. That was one of the last big ones, wasn't it?
Yeah. Do you know Tavis Noyle used to be a bodybuilder?
Mm.
Really?
Do you know that?
Yeah. Probably you've told me that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
might be totally made up.
He might even still be playing. I think he might even still be at the Dragons. Everyone's at the Dragons.
Yeah, I think he is. Yeah, I think you're right.
So one man is apparently not still at the Dragons.
One man is not still at the Dragons. Who?
Dean Ryan.
What, has he been fired?
They wouldn't comment on it, but I think there's a Monday morning meeting planned for Dean Ryan.
I don't think I'm next in line for the Dragons job.
I don't think he was there. Well, it does mean your prediction can finally come true. He'll be England coach when Eddie leaves.
Do you know who would be the perfect man to take over a failing bunch of players and make them into a winning team, and is available as of 5 o'clock on Monday?
You're going to stay here.
Diamond.
Yeah, we'll talk about him in a minute. Let's focus on this game, because I want to ask...
Okay.
Well, two questions, but... I'll start with this one. Cast your mind back, Mark, to first game of the season. You guys were playing Wasps and that remarkable turnaround. Do you think Wasps have got some sort of mental frailty when they're under pressure and just their discipline?
No, I don't think it's necessarily Wasps. I think it's just a thing you go through as a and learning as a team. We did it a few years ago. We gave a few big like where we were up and then we lost a few big ones where we sort of 19, 20 point turnarounds.
Yeah.
I think it takes sort of some sort of senior players to stand up and go, the momentum's been shifted. Things like, and it's not to point the finger at anyone, but like we spoke about before, momentum in the game, and when you're scoring points, it's amazing. And the experience side of going, right, it's going away from us. How are you going to get this back? That's probably it. And it's probably just all it is one breaking play or one passage of play that stops that momentum and they go on to comfortably win that game.
Yeah.
Rather than having a scary 5-10 minutes when it looked like Bath were back in it.
Yeah. Well, that swing in this game was quite incredible. The Bath comeback. Yeah. Well, that from about 50 minutes, kind of 30 minutes left on the clock, and just all of the momentum shifted.
Well, Bath remind me of last year's London Irish, not because they stole half the players, but because last year London Irish were trying to play like structured rugby, and then it would sort of crumble for them and go, forget it, just throw it in the bin, just do whatever you want, boys. And then they'd come back into games, they drew against Worcester.
Everyone. 24 draws in the season.
Sale, Exeter, Saracens, I think. I could get that up. But certainly most of them. And it just felt like Bath were trying to play a structured game. I thought Louis Schroeder, or however you say his name, was completely thrown to the Wolves. Good player, but he couldn't do what they are asking of him. He is not a box-kicking nine. If he is, he hid it well. But he's a very, very good nine. And when it started to open up, I thought he had a bit more success. I thought Bath had a bit more success when they were allowed to play. And it goes back to something Tim said last week. Maybe they're trying to play a game, but they don't have the squad built for the game that they want to play.
That was the point I made last week.
No, Tim said that. It was very...
Tim agreed with it.
It was a great point by Tim. but yeah, they just don't seem to have those players. Cocker de Singer was great. I'll give him that. First real good game I've ever seen him play.
He drew in some players.
Yeah.
Very nicely on a few occasions. But I mean, that first try they scored, the Matt Gallagher try, was great. But they did nothing else in that first half.
Yeah, I worry about Matt Gallagher. He didn't look very assured at all to me.
His box kick was good.
Yeah, his box kick was decent. I think the Cocker de Singer thing was great for him to, you know, have a good game. But it's also indicative of a team which doesn't have carrying ability elsewhere.
Yeah. It was great to see him back flying though. He did look good.
He
did look powerful. He did look like he was sort of dragging three men into every tackle.
Yes, he draws defenders in, doesn't he?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
What's the date? Like, we saw it on the East Midlands derby. The sheer number of defenders that were attracted to someone like, well, not someone like Nandolo, that specifically yeah. Nandolo or Thokkina Singer or Tuilagi. From your perspective, Mark, how does that like change the way that you defend if you've got someone of that stature kind of out the corner of your eye?
You've got to. It's like awareness of that. Like you said about Nandolo, you've got to have an awareness that if it's shifted out to him and he's got space, then you're going to be. Anyone's going to. I don't think as many people are going to hit him one on one. It's like finding a way. It's probably different with Nandolo because they either use him really well off first phase or they get the ball to him early in attack, don't they?
Yeah.
Mm. Whereas Manu's a little bit different because obviously he's probably in and around the ball a bit more and he goes and carries midfield, he carries in phase play a little bit more. So it's probably just, it's understanding like the threat of what's coming beforehand. But yeah, like I said, Nandolo line up, it's only coming one way. And
yeah.
You know, he obviously was out, he probably wasn't in the best position today for one of those breaks, but my God, he gives you something going forward, doesn't he?
He does.
It's something else. Like, and the subtlety, the soft offload that he's got after dropping that big arm. Oh, it's incredible.
The thing I would do if I was defending Nadolo, the thing I'd seriously do, is I would defend in a back line next to Chris Harris. That's what I do.
Yeah, that's the key, isn't it?
Absolutely. All day long.
If you're going to be a winger playing against Nandolo, you want him on your inside, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Or any part. In fact, what's he doing next time that we play West Park St. Helens?
I'll see if he's available.
Yeah, do. So I think Bath are going to struggle mightily this season. I just can't see, just from that pack performance, where they're going to get the go forward from. They had no threat around the breakdown. As soon as Kalute went off, yeah, I like. Is it Clancy? Yeah, fine.
Close enough.
I love Bayliss as a player. I think he's a great player, but he's a completely different guy to the guy that he replaced. I think Schroeder is good second option, but he was put in a difficult position. What is the point in playing Max Adjomo if you're going to give him the ball once? I mean, that boy has to be on the ball all of the time. Actually, there you go. What do you think of Max Adjomo, Mark? Do you think he's a bit raw? Or do you think I think he's brilliant.
I probably haven't seen enough to properly call. I need to watch a bit more. And I think the other bit is, it's tough for those lads like him and Orlando. They've obviously been in a team that's been generally...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Generally on the back foot, haven't they, since they came through?
Yeah.
So like their highlights are often sort of trying something, you know, a chip or a this or that. It's probably not the ability to play many games where it's been, you know, they've had their 15, 20 minutes of front football, then you have to suffer 10 minutes of back football, then you 10, 15 minutes of front football. Like, they've probably had most of it just off the back foot. So I'd like to see
that's
more of it.
That's a really, really good way to put it. I like that.
Like, I reckon he's obviously got brilliant skills and all the rest of it, and I think he's obviously got a big future. But before I could properly give I'd probably need to see him play a bit longer before I could properly say. But he's obviously very, very talented, isn't he?
Yeah, I think you've made a bloody brilliant point of both of those players, actually. They have to try so much stuff in order for anything to come off, because they just don't have the platform that they need.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a great point. And it's hard, back to the point that you made before around the weakness in that back pack, and not just... The tight five, obviously. Ooh. Tom Dunn and Dave Atwood they're doing a lot of work in that pack. But the back row, if you consider the back row options or the eight options that Bath have had over the last few years, with Zach Mercer and Faletau and Nathan Hughes was there for a bit, the go forward from them compared to the guys that they've got, through no fault of their own, it's a different league.
Yeah, and actually, do you know, I thought Van Velsen made a big difference. I never thought I'd be saying that, because I thought his time had gone. But I thought his leadership actually did improve the situation somewhat.
They had a great turnaround, yeah, but not quite enough.
And as for Wasps, I mean, all I say is, when they get going, when they get on top of you, they can be lethal. And I love...
Yeah.
Not Frost, it's the other one. The other one they picked up from the Championship. Centre, outside.
Oh, Spink.
Spink.
He's a good player. Yeah.
Spink and Odendahl looked like a great centre partnership.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
Yeah. I'd say...
They're probably one of the most dangerous teams when, you know, when balls get sort of... Anything in transition, ball gets slapped back, ball gets this, they can hurt teams in that sort of instance.
Yeah.
Very, very sort of... Very dangerous in turnover. Very dangerous.
It's interesting because you look at Gloucester and it's obvious you guys work on your mall. It is obvious. And I think in the same way you can see that you're working on your mall a lot, you look at Wasps and you see they are working on the offload game constantly.
Mm.
Yeah. I'm sure they're like I said, their transition game, their turnover attack is very good. And they come alive in that instance, don't they?
Yeah. And yeah, it's like all hands to the pump.
And then the flip side of that is the risk for Wasps. And this happened a little bit in the run-up to Bath coming back, is... They're brilliant at turnovers until they start making bad calls or the clear out gets a little bit stronger, and then they start getting a bit sloppy, and then they give penalties away, and the penalties start compounding, so they're giving away field position and they can invite pressure on themselves.
So like, were they responsible for like seven penalties back to back?
They're probably ridiculous. In that second, it would not at all surprise me in that second half.
But, you know, the risk point you make is the right point to make. Because if you're Wasps and you're turning over and you've got a great transition game, then the risk of the penalty is probably worth it. Because if you do get the turnover, well, you're going to cause chaos.
Yes, absolutely. Mm. When you've got Jack Willis, a pair of Willises.
Yeah, will I?
Play will him. I, yeah.
Why not?
Good.
Well, last game, and then we'll let Mark get to bed and be a professional. Are you sleeping in your rehab tent tonight?
Weirdly enough, I don't have one of them. But I was just suggesting that to the missus. I'm off to sleep in the rehab tent tonight.
Sounds like heaven.
Yes, yes, please. Picked up an injury again.
You don't mind getting up with a baby, do you? I'm in the rehab tent. No, not tonight, unfortunately.
Oh, hang on. Just before we get on to the last game, I don't really want to talk.
There is two more games.
Why was the other one?
So Bristol Irish.
God, yeah.
Worcester.
Now, we sort of spoke about Irish when we spoke about their outside backs. Do we need to go?
Well, let's just say good win for Bristol. Got a bit nervy towards the end.
Yeah.
Arundel, we've spoken about him.
Yeah, spoke about him. He's superb. On Bristol, though, I feel I'm going to have to deal with them being good this year, and it's going to be painful.
You really enjoyed... Last year was like a heaven year for you.
It was great, wasn't it?
Bristol were bad, Bath were bad. You could revel in it.
But Sale weren't good.
Well, Bristol are top of the league now, aren't they?
Yeah, they were unbeaten. Marcus Bradbury...
Genji's made a big impact.
But, yeah, so Genji's obviously been a great signing. No two ways about that. I'm very fond of AJ, but I think Marcus Bradbury, for a guy I didn't really know much about, has been a phenomenal signing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Look, I
didn't know much about him either. Yeah.
No.
I think yeah, I'd agree with that. But AJ would be a smart bit of business because I think it's probably what she's needed as well is somebody else coming because she's brilliant. I think he probably, you know, it's always if you can have two of them, it makes a huge difference to the one who's been playing. So
yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if at times this year you see Sheedy still being number one and AJ come off the bench because Sheedy steps up and battles him for it. So
yeah, well, I guess the problem with that is salary cap wise, can you afford two of them? And you know, when you've got some fly halves can be fairly flexible. Like Orlando Bailey moved to fullback. I don't see either of those boys being able to move around the field. I think they're a fly half or nothing.
Yeah,
I think
agree.
You're probably right.
You know, the one that I was hoping would step up for Bristol, and maybe fly off his best position from what I've seen, but maybe he could play elsewhere, is Johan Lloyd,
yeah,
who I think is outrageously talented. But I think I was saying that kind of 3 seasons ago, and he's not really fulfilled his potential.
I think they've got him down as a centre these days.
Yeah, but...
He's very talented, isn't he?
Incredibly talented. A bit lightweight, maybe. Lightweight, I don't just mean that physically. I also mean that kind of decision-making.
He's quite tough. He is tough. Like, he makes his tackles. He doesn't shirk anything. Well, I think one thing that he gives them is 20 minutes to go, you bring him on. Something's going to happen, isn't it? It's like that old Matthew... What's that at Cardiff called?
Matthew Morgan.
Bloody hell.
Matthew Morgan.
Played this weekend.
Did he?
Yeah.
Sort of that sort of figure, isn't he? Matthew Morgan, like, you're going, oh, I don't want to see him coming after 20 minutes to go. But Johan Lloyd, he's awfully talented. And I thought that surprised the first... For a small lad, he is tough. He makes his tackles.
Well, I mean, David Flatman said something really interesting. He says lots of things which are interesting. One of the things he said is, when asked who is the toughest player in the Premiership, he went with George Ford because he constantly goes to the line and constantly gets battered and then gets up and goes to the line over and over again. And he's not big. And I think he's right. It's one thing getting battered when you're Dave Atwood or Nathan Hughes. It's another thing when you're George Ford.
Yeah.
And Ford... He rarely misses tackles. He will concede a bit of ground often at times. He very rarely misses tackles.
Yeah, well, Ian Lloyd, I mean, yeah, I think you're right. He should be a 10. Where he's going to play in the future, I don't know. And I think from you, Mark, you've got to remember, it's not easy to go from being a 10 to a world-class 12 just like that. Not you know, not everyone can do it.
Oh, God, no. Some of us were very, very poor 10s, which helps. You know, these boys are top, a very good 10, so it's very different for them.
Too modest, mate. Too modest.
So humble.
So last one. I don't know, what do you do about this one? So, yeah, okay, great win. Points they can sell.
It's one for rugby Twitter, isn't it, this?
They
rugby Twitter like to see this result.
Well, I mean, God knows what. Yeah. They do. So I guess you. I mean, do you live in Cheltenham?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. All rugby players live in Cheltenham. I guess. So you must be bumping into the Worcester lads fairly frequently, because I guess they all live in Cheltenham too, do they not?
Yeah, there's less than there used to be. There used to be more, I'd say.
Yeah. Well, in the good times.
In a different time these days, isn't it?
Yeah.
Cheltenham's not for everyone.
Yeah. do you get a sense of the players, of the kind of the desperation, or are they just carrying on? What's the sense that you get from chatting to them, I guess?
Good mate of mine, Owen Williams, really, he's one of my closest mates, and he sort of sums up, says it well, you know. He's a very cynical Welshman, but he says it in a way like, there's nothing they can do, so they might as well crack on.
Yeah,
you know, you can do all you want, you can say all you want, but there's not masses that they can impact. So you are a rugby team, so you might as well crack on. You know, the times you hear about them saying like, oh well, could have gone off and not trained or done this, and the bit I completely get is training, and you've got to have an idea and train that you're supported by your club.
Yeah.
You can't train properly without knowing full well that you're supported. And if something happens in training, you get the same support you would on match day. And I reckon that's probably where they've come unstuck, because I wouldn't be doing it. I wouldn't be, if it was training pre-season and they're saying, do you want to whack each other? I would be saying, I'm not doing that.
I think that's a perfectly fair way to look at things.
It's a very good observation. It's also the performance this weekend. One of the things that was going through my head when I saw the result was, it's a great chance to be in the shop window. You know, 99% certainty as we sit here right now that come 5 p.m. tomorrow, 5 p.m. on Monday, they'll be looking for a new job.
Well, I mean, it is the harsh world that we live in, and
is that genuinely the case? Is that expecting to see?
So
maybe a suspension for the rest of whatever this is. The suspension comes on Monday, and then them to sort this out. I might be wrong. I think they go, don't they?
I can't see. Personally, I can't see a route for them to survive in their current, like this team survive there.
No,
I think they're going to be suspended from all rugby. I think they'll be relegated. The level of relegation will depend on how they use the kind of force majeure COVID clause.
Yep.
Which could be full relegation to the bottom of the pyramid, or they could find a way to relegate them one level.
I think they've got to go to the bottom. I really think they've got to go to the bottom.
It might be the kind thing to do to the club, but I could also see it that, like, almost a fudge because of that force majeure type clause, which said if you can prove that it's outside, if you can demonstrate it's outside your control, a force majeure type scenario, which obviously the pandemic has led to. It's at least one of the building blocks that's led to this point that they're
it's
at.
It's a factor,
now. Yeah.
What are they going to do with Six Ways? Because they don't have a Premiership football team there, do they?
There was some football club was playing there, wasn't there? They had
Worcester
a game
Pirates or something, Worcester Raiders.
Yeah,
when you say you put them to the bottom, what does it achieve by putting them to the bottom?
Well, so we saw this with the London Welsh. And if you go to London Welsh now, it's an absolute thriving club. And my question to the fans would be, do you support the club or do you support watching Premiership rugby? And there's no shame in doing either. There'll be some people who love Premiership rugby and they'll go to Gloucester and they'll go to Bath and they'll go to Wasps. They'll go to all those clubs and that's fine. But if you really support your club and it's the club that you love, the club's not going to go anywhere. The club will still be there. And you can actually make a difference to that club then. You can go down at level 7 or level 8 or level 9 or wherever they find themselves and actually help out and actually get connected again to the thing which you say that you really support. I think it'd be an amazing opportunity.
They couldn't operate that. I just mean...
Six Ways.
London Welsh against Worcester is... You know, London Welsh... Not to say they've got themselves... They're dangerous territory to say they've got themselves into that scenario, but, you know, they... Them going back to Richmond and all the rest of it from where they were in Oxford, there was no fan base, and it was almost like the natural thing. But
yeah,
you're essentially starting. And I think if you relegate them to level 7 or wherever it goes to, you're essentially starting a new club in Worcester, and you might as well scrap everything to do with the previous Worcester, and therefore the fans haven't got anything, have they?
Well, I think what will happen, you know, so I think this will happen with Wasps as well if they go under, is Wasps do have an amateur side. London Welsh had an amateur side. So they just merged the... Instead of going right to the bottom of the pyramid, they sort of like have a placeholder. Well, then that side, so Worcester Amateurs, I'm sure that they do exist. I need to actually look that up. But I suppose that will be the new Worcester. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. In fact, I think if I was a Worcester fan, I'd be embracing it because that's the future.
You just have got this fantasy, JB, of...
Playing for Worcester.
Next week, Steve Diamond picking up the phone and saying, JB, we're going to be in level 8 next year.
JB, do you know any cheap rugby players?
We need a tight head prop who can also play wing.
Count me in. Count me in. But yeah, I think it's very sad for everyone involved.
I've been impressed by the management. I'd give them that. I think I've been impressed by the way that it's been... I know you're very vocal on Dimes, JB, but I think it's been... It's been impressive the way they've done it so far as a whole club. You know, I particularly enjoyed. I don't know who's responsible, but the Twitter sign off after 52 minutes against us on Wednesday.
Yeah,
I thought that was genius, absolutely genius.
Well, they were showing pictures of the bar this week and the staff working behind the bar. I'm thinking, like, just give away the beer.
Well,
what's the incentive?
So, do I think that there's pictures there?
The party bar
of Diamond pulling pints on Saturday night. So from what I can make out, basically they've drank six ways dry after the game. The players and any fans who are still about have drank all the remaining beer.
Yeah, so I was thinking about Diamond today, and one of the ironies, I don't know if it's an irony, it's certainly not a bad thing, I don't think, but it's fair to say, and anyone that knows the guy will know, he was desperate to win the Premiership. Like, that was the thing he really wanted the most. Prove everyone wrong that, you know, he could do it. It's going to be crazy to think that he'll probably make his name be most famous for the effort that he's done right at the bottom of the league. And rightly so. And actually, everyone can laud him for it because he did it without the money, without... You know, he's done all the things that he is good at and was never recognised for.
Yeah. I've not always been... I said this last week. Not always been Diamond's biggest fan, but... I've been very impressed with the way him and Nick Easter and everyone else at the club have pulled together and got through this.
I'd agree, yeah.
Now, the other side of this coin is the slightly worrying one, because there'll be a team that does still exist in a week's time who are not doing particularly well at the moment. They had a good start against Quins, although kind of threw it away towards the end. But Falcons...
They're not good, are they?
Other than George McGuigan getting over for the inevitable pushover try, won a game, not a lot happening there.
Did Carl Fern stop?
No, he did not.
Well, they got what they deserved. What do you want me to say? I just don't think they're very good.
Yep.
Mark, you got anything to add to they're not very good?
I don't know how that game played. I've not seen that game. I saw the tries.
Yeah, same.
But I'd be intrigued to sort of, you know, the emotion around. I'd be intrigued to see the first 20 minutes because I feel like it's the type of game that when it's this last hurrah and all the rest of it, it's probably the type of game that if you let the team play on emotion, if you let them have it for the first 20 minutes, they'll probably, it goes one way or the other. It's either shut up shop and you can't sustain that based on emotion or you can ride that wave. If you get a couple of tries early on, you can ride that wave. So you really need to sort of end that hope early doors. That's all I can think is that that's not happened. Then Worcester have grown and grown and grown and played, and by all accounts, played really well.
Yeah, they've got a decent fan base, Worcester. I mean, not a huge fan base, but a very passionate one.
Always a good place to go. Yeah. Always a good place, yeah.
Yeah. Now, imagine this scenario, if you will. So we've spoke about all of the Premiership teams, and I think the one thing we can all agree on is that when you get the best 15 players for each Premiership team, every team has got one hell of a starting team. There's not a weak team in the Prem now. However, we're in a situation where two teams have folded, there are lads available, and a DOR might say, maybe a DOR who looks like a famous film star, might turn around to one of his senior players, tap him on the shoulders and say, Mark, we're going to pick up a Wasp player and a Worcester player, but I just need your input. Who would it be?
Who would you go after? What's he saying? Famous film star like that. What's he saying to me is Am I going for an up and comer, or
whatever you want? Whatever you want,
like a squad, someone to add to the squad, or a big starter. That's Jimmy.
Who is the most talented player? Who would you go for?
We want to win this year.
I'd say it'd be hard to look past adding launchers to a side. I think that's I reckon it'd be tough to not add. Most sides would want to add Launchbury.
Yep.
Yeah.
I can't see any side that would turn down adding him into your match day squad.
Yeah.
He'd be a good Gloucester player. They would love him at Gloucester too.
Oh, they'd love him. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he'd go well with a lot of our second rows as well.
Yeah, because most of yours at second rows, I'm thinking now.
He'd play well with Freddie Clark. He'd play well with Matty Alamano. They play very well together. He'd be one that you'd. I think it'd be hard to look past someone like him. Worcester, and then I was about to say that big bruiser on the wing for Worcester, but I don't think we need to add wingers.
No, you've got more than enough talent out there. Duan is outrageous.
Duan at eights? Yeah, but you've got a load of eights too, so then
we've got all the eights and all the wingers. Yeah, we don't need... that's not an area we need to add. You give me some ideas. What would I be adding from...
Well, if you're looking for a young player, I think they've got two centres there that are very good.
I won't be going
to him saying, do you want to add a centre?
An outside centre.
Yeah, Ollie Lawrence plays outside only.
Imagine me going to George going, do you know what? Ollie Lawrence is available. Do you fancy it? do you want a young, English, very, very talented centre?
Or your namesake, who actually plays a bit like you in Seb Atkinson.
He's very good. We'll sign him and Charlie and confuse everyone, shall we?
Yes. Perfect.
Yeah, that's what you want to do.
Who would I sign I don't know. Who would I sign from Worcester? That's a sad...
So, it's always good to add a British and Irish line, Lou said.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Would be handy.
Batley's obviously had a good start to the season, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I think it's another big bruiser who can play back row or six or second row for you.
I do like Ted Hill, although he's not played
Ted
this year.
Ted Hill is
he's a good player.
Ted Hill's a phenomenal player, actually. Ted Hill and the guy that's gone to France, so you can't have him.
Hatherall.
Hatherall, very good player.
That business already done.
Yeah. So, not a big fan of Wall Street Seams and Mark. Oh, well. We'll leave it at that.
I'd bring back my mate Owen Williams, wouldn't I?
There you go.
Yeah.
I've got a question about him for after the pod. But here's the last question for you before we let you go. Now, it's a running joke on the podcast that you have an international fly half playing for you. Is anyone aware that you have two international fly halves, and why does he never play fly half?
I can't think of the other one.
You can't think of
it. Oh, Santi.
So the people really don't know. They really don't know there's an international fly half.
I was thinking as Billy Twelvetrees played fly half for England.
Billy Twelvetrees is higher up on your fly half pecking order than Santi.
He is. Honestly, as talented a player as I've seen, he can do it all.
I'm
so glad we got him signed up, because I don't think teams quite realised until last year how good he was.
I don't think that you guys realised how good he was.
He's amazing. We made him that good. You lot didn't realise. We knew. We sent him to Argentina. Argentina sent him over to us, and we made him that good. He's brilliant. Honestly, he is so talented. The type of lad who puts the ball in a cone and then knocks it over from 50, whilst the kickers are kicking properly. I'll have a go at that. I'll do some restarts, then puts down a sixpence every time. He is super talented.
Will he be playing 10 for Gloucester anytime soon?
I think he'll play. I think he'll play 15. I think they. This is a move they're making with him to play 10, and I think he could. I don't think it's a case of saying he couldn't, but I reckon it'd be much harder to go into our team as a sort of English being your second language.
Yes.
I think that'd be really tough. But naturally he sort of steps in at first receiver it's very different to be a brilliant second receiver, a brilliant first receiver but on a short side, say, rather than constantly being the man calling the shots. It's hard enough, I think, like Haisto's second language is English, isn't it? So We have to get there with him. But I'm glad you mentioned Santi, because my God, I'm so glad we signed him up before teams quite realised he's incredible.
Well, when we saw him playing for Argentina, we went into Google Overdrive. Like we were trying to make sure, cross referencing, that the winger from Gloucester is really an international fly half.
Yeah, you watch him. Honestly, watch him defend. He is the positions he gets into defensively are incredible, and that's a winger who's brilliant going forward. And you end up talking about how good he is defensively. That's when you know someone's good.
Yes, yes. Well, you've got a very talented Georgian too, quite a look of.
The crazy Georgian, yeah, he's brilliant. He's, you know what, I think he's only going to get better and better.
Yeah, I agree with that.
He's probably not got the time on the field yet, but he keeps getting a sniff every now and again. I know the coaches like him, and he sort of does things every now and again. And you go, oh, I want to see more of that. So he's, I think he'll come good. It's just about getting time on the field, isn't it? So. This Prem Cup's given a few boys a good opportunity at the moment. So, see how he progresses. Yeah.
Well, mate, thank you so, so much.
Thanks for having me.
You've been more than an able stand-in for our only professional broadcaster.
let me know when the big dog's off doing BT stuff in the future, and we'll link up.
Definitely, mate, definitely. All right.
Cheers. Thanks for having me, chaps.
Bye-bye. Cheers, Mark. Bye.
See you, fellas. Bye-bye. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.